Geez, it's only it's a small class tonight, but yeah, we have the best students. So, I was just thinking what to talk about, and it's always going to be in line with the meditation practice. So, yeah, when we think about the meditation, what do we think of? Yeah. And I always like to reflect on what we are actually doing when it comes to the actual act of meditation. Yeah. Just reflecting on that teaches us where we want our minds to go, or what we want to develop with our minds. Just think about it. Just the act of just clearing your evening, or just clearing your day to give yourself 1 hour. That act of just putting your life aside and finding a quiet place, whether it's a meditation room you may have at home, or may just coming here, or just any quiet old place where you can just free yourselves. Just what meditation is. Just finding a. It's kind of ironic. Just putting yourself into a dark room, and locking the door to find freedom. In a sense, when you look at that, it's sort of like putting yourself in a small dark room and locking the door is putting yourself in a prison. but we're not doing, in a sense, from the outside, that's what it looks like. Yeah, that's what the monks live in. So the monks live, if you go to Bodhinyana Monastery, if you get the chance, sometimes you're able to see how the monks live. So they open up the kutis, or where the monks live, so lay people can actually go there and have a look at how they live. So it's very simple. There's a big block of land, and there's just huts in the forest. So the huts are not that big. They're about, you know, 3 meters by 2.8 meters or something. That's very small. Or maybe 3 by 3. Just say 3 by 3. And it's just double brick, one door, two windows. And on the front, there's a path where the monks can do walking meditation. They can walk up and down, and it's covered. So the path is about 20 paces long. And if you can imagine, this is in the middle of the forest. So you don't have no lounge room. You don't have no laundry room. You don't have no kitchen. You don't have no toilet. You have no games room. It's just one bedroom in the forest. Yeah. So we lock ourselves in a room to find freedom.
Almost a firefighter worker.
Yeah, to find freedom. To find freedom. So, and that's, so when you think about that, you come to the realization that you don't really need to go anywhere to look for peace, to look for freedom. You don't have to travel to Thailand to talk to the monks, or travel to India and go to like a ashram to find freedom. You find freedom like within this body and mind. You know, this body and mind that we have, and that's one of the reflections that we contemplate as, you know, people who are looking for some peace in our minds. And that contemplation, that reflection, is the peace that we're looking for, the stillness. The wisdom that comes from the stillness is not found outside in the world. Yeah. It's not found in temples, it's not found in monasteries, but it's found within us. Yeah. Within this body and mind. That's why, you know, we teach meditation. Yeah. That's why we do meditation. Yeah. So just the act of disengaging from the world, finding yourself a comfortable seat, closing your eyes, and just observing what is going on. Yeah. And having those little goals in the mind that says, you know, you want to steer the mind in a direction. You know, you want to steer it towards the direction of peace, the direction of stillness. And, you know, if you look at the mind and you look at your life, you know, in order for us to achieve certain goals in life, we have to have an idea of what we want. And then we steer our way towards it, whether it's like trying to keep healthy. So we know what to do to keep healthy. We've got to eat the right foods. We've got to exercise. Got to keep active. So we have those goals in our minds. And then we do the research, whatever. And then we just implement them and put them into practice. And then over time, our bodies become healthy. And in the same way, it's the same with the idea of trying to like have some peace in our minds, is to understand why we're sitting down. You know, we're sitting down not just to allow our minds to just fantasize and dream and fall asleep and just go in whatever direction the mind wants to go to, but instead we have these little goals of having a little bit more peace, bit more stillness. The reason why I say little goals is because I'm trying to take away the control that we have as human beings, or the willpower, or the trying too hard when we meditate. So that's why I say like little goals, little goals. So you have these little things that you can work towards, and you can guide yourself towards it. You can lean your mind towards it. So one of the things that you can understand when you're sitting down is understand, okay, reason why I'm sitting down is because I want to lead my mind to a little bit of peace, to a little bit of stillness. And it's like, what do I have to do? Like, what do I have to do in order to get that peace, in order to get that stillness? So one of the things that we do is we let go. Yeah. We try to let go of the mind that thinks. Yeah. Whatever distracting thoughts, we know what distracting thoughts are. We can let ourselves know, okay, this is a time to let go. This is a time to not think about it. So what we're doing there is we're setting up our minds to let go. Yeah. Because in the past, if we didn't tell our minds to let go, we'll just allow these thoughts to enter. They'll just enter our minds, and because we have been told nothing, we haven't been told how to meditate, the thoughts will come in and they'll just stay in the mind and they'll just go everywhere. They go left, right, and they'll end up causing you havoc and giving you a headache. So this time when you're meditating, when you have something arise within your own mind, you can just tell yourself, this is the time to let it go. Yeah. And just leave it at that. You just tell your mind, okay, now is not the time for thoughts. This is the time to let go. And then through the repetitive instruction, through the intention, the mind will start to slowly let go of these thoughts that arise in the mind. So that's like one way of getting rid of these distracting thoughts. And another way of, you could say, shield your mind. Like you're creating a shield, your mind from these distracting thoughts, is to learn how to be more present when we're meditating. So this idea of the present moment awareness. So if you can be, if you can live more in the present moment, in a sense, you are shielding yourself from those distracting thoughts to come in to your mind. Yeah. If you're more present, like in the here and now, you're here and you're now, you're attentive, you're focused, you know what is going on. And because you're in the here and the now, if you think about it, there's no other thoughts that can come into your mind. So if you can do that, the mind starts to stay peaceful for longer periods of time. So in a sense, if you just look at what you got to do when you meditate, is you're trying to build up that sense of peace. Yeah. And that sense of peace is in this present moment. Like when nothing is really happening. That is peaceful. Yeah. That's why they describe, like, you know, they go, if you take your car and you drive through peak hour traffic, that's kind of considered chaotic. It's chaotic because there's all these cars, there's cars on the road, there's hundreds of people on the road, there's, you know, pollution, car noises, ambulances, everything's just busy, just grabbing your attention. There's so many things going on. And then if you go for a drive in the bush, where there's hardly anybody on the road, it's just you and yourself, and the sun is kind of setting, the skies are clear, and you're like driving in nature, and just the simplicity and the less busyness of where you are creates a sense of peace. There's a peaceful feeling when you're driving in rural areas, when the weather's clear, there's no cars around, and you're with nature. And the reason why it's peaceful is because it's simple, and because you can sort of be more in the moment. You're not distracted by the many cars that surround you if you travel in peak hour traffic. So that's sort of like the mind. You know, the more thoughts we have in our mind, the chaoticness of it is just like driving through peak hour traffic. So I've traveled in cars with people, and a lot of the times people do not like peak hour traffic. They just don't like it, stuck in traffic, blah, 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 all that kind of stuff. They can start to complain about it. But then when they're out in the driving in, you know, peaceful country roads, it's nice and peaceful. Nobody complains because it's simple. It's more in the moment. There's nothing really distracting you. And this is how we kind of define, you know, within our own minds, what is peace and what isn't peace. So peacefulness comes from the simplicity of what is in front of us when we're meditating. Simplicity of just being in the present moment. Simplicity of just having lesser activity in the mind. Those are like indicators of peace arising within our minds. We can understand that. We can feel it. We can experience it. And the opposite we can understand. The chaoticness in our minds. How many thoughts are we having in 10 seconds? You know, some people have like 100 thoughts in 10 seconds. That's chaotic. That's not peaceful. Yeah. So we use this kind of gauge or standard when we're meditating just to judge for ourselves how we're going. Yeah. And, you know, if you have a quiet and peaceful Mine, that's great, you know, just keep going. But you can always sharpen the peacefulness, you can always get a little bit deeper. And, you know, if you have a mind which is just a little bit too chaotic, there's no need to be hard on yourself, yeah? There's no need to give up. But instead, just have a bit of understanding that you're new to the meditation. These things take time. And you can just always, you know, give yourself a pat on the back for just putting the effort in to trying to reach the goal of peace, the goal of stillness within one's meditation. And that's all we can do, I think. Like, that's all we can do. We can only try. We can only put effort in onto the meditation. If you talk to people who have meditated for many years, because I think, well, I've been a monk long enough, and I've seen there's like phases that you go through as a meditator. You know, when you first come into the meditation, you're really enthusiastic, you put in a lot of effort, you're restraining yourself, you're doing it strictly, and you put in the many hours. And then I think after some time, reality starts to kick in, and then you start to realize that all this effort and restraining yourself and being tough on yourself, you start to realize that these things may be kind of like setting yourself a high standard, but these aren't really getting the results that I'm looking for. And when you start to understand that the mind has its own pace of progress, so after a while you start to embrace that, and instead of setting yourself these really high goals that you're going to attain something within the 2 or 3 weeks of the meditation that you come to, instead just take the mind of a meditator that's been meditating for a long, long time, and they meditate with the kind of understanding that all they're doing is they're just trying. Yeah? They're putting their butts on the cushion and they're just trying. They're putting the time in and they're just letting the meditation to develop and grow all by itself. Yeah? If you know what I mean? Is that's all we can do if you think about it. You've been meditating here how many years already? Or you're just beginning? And when you think about it, at the end of the day, you're just putting your bum on the cushion, closing your eyes, and just trying to develop more peace and more stillness within one's own mind. Yeah. Okay. Any comments or questions before we start? It's clear enough. Hopefully you got something from it. So what kind of meditation would you like to do tonight? I'm taking suggestions.
I've been very attached to animals and plants of recent.
Yeah.
So maybe something around a bit of loving kindness.
Oh, loving kindness, yes. Okay, yeah, we can do loving kindness. Yep. Ooh. So, okay. So yeah, loving kindness is one of those. Is actually a teaching of the Buddha, and it's a great and powerful thing to contemplate or reflect upon in our lives. It's actually a great way to overcome a lot of the things that we come across in life, especially with people. Yes. You know, sometimes you may be just hanging out with your mates and you're kind of talking about somebody negatively, and somebody comes along who's a little bit wise and says, yeah, maybe you just need a little bit of loving kindness. And that kind of wakes you up and makes you realize that, hey, your judgments on that person could be a little bit too harsh and a bit too harsh. So exercising a little bit of loving kindness can ease the stress or ease the tension that you have with this person. So loving kindness is a way for us to just soften our relationship to the experience that we're having around us. Yes. Loving kindness is one of those emotions that we all know and that we can bring up. And it's an emotion which is from the, you know, from the heart. Yes. So we can just center our minds and the first person that we can give loving kindness to is ourselves. You know, when was the last time you actually gave your mind some kindness? When was the last time you gave your mind a little bit of loving kindness? You know, the emotion of like friendliness, the emotion of love, the emotion that may arise when you see a cute puppy dog, or if you do like children, you see little kids, or just being in nature. You know, the feelings that these objects kind of allow, these objects kind of bring out these emotions that we have from within. So sometimes, yes, we need to give some loving kindness to ourselves. We could say to ourselves, may I be happy, may I be well. We can also give some loving kindness, some gentleness, some softness to the present moment. We can feel the emotions right here, right now, while we're sitting, dwelling with loving kindness in the present moment. So if we can, we can just picture something that we know that it's easy for us to develop that friendliness, that kindness, whether it's our favorite pet, or whether it's a friend, a partner, anybody or anything, and just bring them to mind and just allow them to trigger or manifest the kindness that you have within, the friendliness, the loving intention. And just use them to bring up these emotions. can send loving kindness to our parents. We have good reason to give our parents loving kindness, even if they may not be here. We can always send loving kindness to them. We can always be grateful. You know, gratitude is sometimes a nice way to develop wholesome emotions within one's mind. We can have gratitude towards our parents and grateful that they gave us life. We're grateful that they raised us, that they fed us, that they took us to school and taught us about life. We're grateful for that. And we can have loving kindness because of the things that they've done for us. So we can always just dwell upon your parents for a little while. We can be grateful for the life that we have. Just think about it. We get to live in a pretty good country, a very good country, you could say. I mean, life may not be the easiest for some of us, but I'm pretty sure you can be grateful of something that you have in your life living in a country like this. You're grateful that you have a job. You're grateful that you got a car. You're grateful that life is pretty good, and that physically you're healthy, there's no problems really. You know, life ain't all that bad. You could be living somewhere else where there's poverty, where you're struggling, where you don't have a roof over your head. But you're not in that situation. You're not in a place of suffering. You're in a place of reasonable comfort. So that in itself is something that we can be grateful for. grateful for the life that we have. We can be grateful to have our meditation buddies that we can meditate with in this room. Like, unconsciously, we're kind of encouraging each other to meditate. We are supporting each other by doing the same thing, which creates an energy of a meditation vibe that we all can tune into when we're meditating together. We're grateful that we have this opportunity to meditate in the group. Grateful that we have the opportunity to learn some meditation. We can picture each individual that is sitting in this room, and we, with the same intention, you know, people who are meditating, you know, we're very, very similar. We're doing the same thing, you know. We're all meditating, and just knowing that we are all here, all in one room, we can just see if we can just give each other a little bit of kindness, a little bit of friendliness. You can just picture the meditators, this person, picture, give them some loving kindness. That person, give them some loving kindness. Just make that intention. That person, that person. Let's go throughout the room. You know, meditation is not, we don't meditate to cure anything, to fix anything. I think that's a misconception that people have. That meditation is a magical thing. But no, it doesn't work that way. You know, meditation gives you an experience. That's all it does. An experience of peace, an experience of freedom. And how does that help? And it's like, you know, these benefits that arrive from the meditation practice may not show up straight away, but the peace, the experience that you have now, it kind of leaks into your life in its own way. Yeah, you can start to see the benefits, you know. 2-3 weeks time, a month or two, you start to think, life is a little bit easier. Life is a little less stressful. And this is how the meditation helps. It's what you experience now. The stillness, the peace, somehow that leaks out into your life and it has its benefits. all come out of your meditation. How was it? Very good. Any questions?
Just
comments.
I'm sort of talking about the energy of the space, the meditative space. I very much get a sense of that in group meditation. Another log on the fire, almost that visible energetic for me. But do you think, other than for you, the individual in a state of presence, getting the benefit of the body and the mind being so restful, really, it's still a place for it to do healing? But also, what sort of cool holding space, especially in a group like this, where I do get a sense of the broader sense of presence, but the benefit to maybe the earth and other things are the benefits that we get to of it.
The meditation. I can't really say anything about that. One story that comes to mind, if you're talking about the power of the mind and how it can affect things, you can always take this. You can take this story with a pinch of salt, because you know it's a story whether you believe it or not. So I remember as an anagarika, so that's when I was wearing white. So you do that. You do that for a year, living in monasteries, you wear white, and you kind of, you work in the kitchen, you drive the monks around, that kind of stuff. You're called an anagarika. So I remember that year, they had a ceremony in the city, on along Riverside Drive, where the parks are. It's one of the big Buddhist ceremonies. And it was a big deal. A lot of people got invited, important people, politicians, large Buddhist groups, blah 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 blah. It was a huge event, and it was planned. It has been months in planning, and then they set the date. And you know, a big event like that, you just set the date and you just do it. And so. So what I remember was a big Buddha statue that they imported from Thailand, and now that Buddha statue sits in the community hall in the Dhammaloka Center. So it's a big, massive one. It's the size of, I don't know, one of these door panels? Yeah, about that size. And it's made out of solid brass. Solid brass or bronze? Maybe bronze, I'm not sure. I remember they had to transport that around. From, I think, Dhammaloka, they transported that to Riverside Drive. So that's one of the big jobs they were doing. And then also there was a setup, stages, microphones and what have you. And the monks also got invited to leave the monastery. So monks rarely leave the monastery, only when we get invitations like this. Other than that, we spend most of our time in the monastery. But on that, so... That day, the weather was crazy. I think a couple of days beforehand, the weather was mad. It was just raining, flooding. I think even Riverside Drive flooded. It was that bad. Yeah. And Ajahn Brahm, I don't think he told the story at the time. So that evening, I think he had a ticket to fly to Singapore. So he had his weekend set out. So he had to do this somewhere on this day. And it was going to rain heavily. No one was going to attend. Everybody was telling him to cancel. So this was like a couple of days beforehand. The weather was really bad. And it was only after, a few years that I heard that prior to the ceremony, Ajahn Brahm did a whole bunch of chanting. Yeah. So, in Buddhism, we have these Buddhist chants. And it's like a blessing or, we want something to happen. We kind of chant for it. So you can imagine Ajahn Brahm with the power of his mind. Putting all his mindfulness, all his wisdom, all his like meditation into the chant to kind of stop the weather from spoiling the event. So he only told us that, I think, years after. But what happened on the night was, it was just crazy, right? And during the time of the ceremony, the rain stopped. The rain stopped. The clouds parted and the moon came out. So it's like one of these kind of amazing things that happened that weren't supposed to happen. Yeah. So the ceremony was conducted, it ended, and Ajahn Brahm, he continues the story. And I remember he was saying that he was waiting at the airport, and I think they had booklets they were giving out. I think it's a commemorative something, and there was a booklet made, and it was just effort from himself and a lot of other Buddhists around Australia and around the world getting together and making something happen. It's like one of these big events, and he was just sitting in the airport, just going through the book and just reflecting on what has happened. And he said, this is from, a monk who's meant to be detached. He said, tears of gratitude just started to flow from his eyes. Yeah. And it's kind of like interesting to people who know him, and interesting to, it's the life of a monk. We don't really cry as monks. But yeah, it was one of these just unusual situations where you hear a story of a monk crying because he felt that he's done something great for Buddhism. Yeah. So yeah, it's really hard to say how the mind can affect things around us. But there are stories out there. But yeah, it's just how we want to listen to them as human beings, I guess. Some of us believe them, some of us don't. That's just normal. That is life. Yeah. But the one thing that I heard is this one lady. She was suffering from chronic pain for many years, and she went to see the specialist, went to see the doctor, and she said the thing that kind of helped her with relieving her pain was the meditation and what she learned from the monks and the nuns. So what she learned was just to be mindful of the body, be calm, be peaceful when you're meditating, and just giving it loving kindness. Yeah. And she said just with those kind of practices, the chronic pain that she had, it kind of disappeared. Yeah. And then also my teacher Ajahn Brahm, he's 73, he's overweight. People always telling him, Ajahn, you're going to die, you're overweight. And he's like, oh yeah, everybody's going to die anyways. But then he doesn't say that, I'm just making it up. But he always comes back to his meditation and how he uses meditation to keep himself healthy. Yeah. And he's you know, he was always saying that. So yeah. So sometimes, yeah, we can just use, like, you know, our meditation. We can just transfer that energy into our daily lives. Yeah, it's like, oh, okay, we meditate. It's like, okay, maybe today I can just develop more, like, positivity in my life, more gratitude, you know, throughout my day. Find reasons to be grateful for something, or find reasons to be positive. And sometimes that positivity is all we need to make our day feel a little bit better. Yeah. And meditation helps that. Okay.